Hello and welcome to Press Review Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. 22 years have passed since the 9/11 attacks in the United States. That day ended up with a loss of almost 3,000 lives and Washington accusing mostly Saudis of carrying out the attacks. It was followed by the U.S.'s so-called war on terror, which has left at least 5 million people dead and destroyed or destabilized several countries around the world, most of those where no hijackers were allegedly from. The U.S. and its friends have also displaced at least 38 million people from Pakistan to Somalia, and Washington is currently conducting counter-terror activities in at least 85 countries. Well, we'll take a look at what all of this means on the Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. George Zamula, Senior Research Fellow, Global Policy Institute, out of London Metropolitan University. And Tony Gosling, historian, investigative journalist, out of Bristol. Well, thank you both for being with me. I want to start this off with George. The U.S. attacked Afghanistan shortly after those attacks on its soil. It talked about what it had accomplished. What was accomplished? I remember, actually, at one point during this war on terror, that was after the Iraq, where Bush talked about mission accomplished. But in general, let's look at Afghanistan right now. The 20 years that the United States was there, the occupation and the war, what did it accomplish?
Well, it accomplished precisely nothing. The United States spent some $2.3 trillion there. Who knows what the real sum is? More than 4,000 American servicemen died in Afghanistan. And the ostensible goal, which was to topple the Taliban, which was for some bizarre reason blamed for the 9/11 terrorist attacks, that certainly has not been accomplished because the Taliban has returned to power. But the war itself, if we just stick to the Afghanistan part, should never, of course, have happened because the Taliban had pretty much offered the United States the head of Osama bin Laden. I mean, they said, just present us with some evidence that bin Laden was responsible for the 9/11 terrorist attacks, and we will hand bin Laden over to you. The Bush administration simply wasn't going to accept that, and they intended to invade without negotiating or anything at all. So that, you know, if the goal was to get bin Laden, get the people who were responsible for those attacks, then that could have been accomplished without an invasion of Afghanistan.
Well, Tony, you heard what George is saying. Do you think that the goal was perhaps never to really get bin Laden, but to use it as an excuse to get into Afghanistan? Or how do you see all of this in general?
Well, there's a lot of evidence, actually, that Osama bin Laden was dead by the time of the September the 11th attacks. He'd had a kidney operation in the American hospital in Dubai, reported by Jon Snow of Britain's Channel 4 News a few months before these attacks. He was seriously ill, and there were even announcements of his funeral. So there's, I think, a lot of game playing was going on around at the time. Bin Laden himself was part of this US operation, really, very close to the Saudis, Operation Cyclone, which began in the 1980s, which was to create this kind of false version of Islam and to get them to commit these various terrorist attacks in order to have an excuse to go into Arabic and Islamic countries. And of course, we saw that. I think it's fair to say with the 9/11 attacks in 2001, the project for the new American century, which, by the way, is many dual US-Israeli citizens were steering that, the idea was to sort of set the tone for the whole of the 21st century with these attacks in 2001, and to really to try and open a door for the United States militarily to have an excuse to go into pretty much any country that it wanted to. So it's very easy to say, oh, well, we think it was a conspiracy. Maybe, you know, the Israelis were involved, the United States were involved, some sort of inside job or false flag attack. But I would just ask people to focus on just three things to do with those attacks. First of all, the non-appearance of the United States Air Force that day to shoot down these so-called terrorist-controlled planes. Then, of course, there was the thermite, which was discovered in the Twin Towers that had come down. This is an explosive, so there's very clear evidence that those towers may have been brought down by explosives rather than by the aircraft crashing into them. And finally, Building 7, which is this building which collapsed that day without a single plane hitting it into its own footprint at free fall speed. So in a way, you know, you can see that it's almost like it was a film-produced event, scripted, and the idea being to then give the United States an excuse to go into other countries, which, of course, they did. You know, they did it in Afghanistan and Iraq and other countries, too.
Well, George, I mean, as I was listening to Tony, I thought about just the whole phrase conspiracy theories. And after 9/11, we saw this phrase starting to be used. And now we see it used so often on social media. It is as if it was an excuse that anything or anytime someone questioned whatever the mainstream narrative became, that was a way of basically destroying their reputation. I want to talk about that because he brought up some interesting points and made me really think about this whole conspiracy theory and what this has done to the psyche of perhaps many journalists and others who would have been a little bit more, analyzing the situation overall a little bit deeper.
Well, no question. And I think that term conspiracy theory was coined by the CIA to dismiss and discount demonize anyone at all who questioned official narrative. So if you question the official story of Pearl Harbor, and there are many, many questions about Pearl Harbor where you were a conspiracy theorist. If you question the official story about the Kennedy assassination, well, you were a conspiracy theorist. And then again, we get to 9/11, then you are a conspiracy theorist. And of course, once you dub something a conspiracy theory, then there's no need to discuss it any further. Then whoever is presenting it is obviously a crackpot who doesn't need to be discussed at all. And there's no question that the behavior of the United States in the aftermath of 9/11 was indeed very, very strange. I mean, the perpetrator, according to the administration, according to the official line of George W. Bush, the perpetrator was Osama bin Laden. So why exactly did the United States invade Iraq? What does bin Laden have to do with Iraq? I mean, Iraq, Saddam Hussein was a secular leader. He was a Ba'athist. He hated jihadis. He hated al-Qaeda. He had nothing to do with al-Qaeda. How did it come about that within 18 months of those attacks, the United States was invading Iraq and blaming Iraq ludicrously for responsibility for the 9/11 attacks? But, you know, if you raise any of these issues, then, you know, you were a conspiracy theorist.
Well, you know, Tony, we're looking at this and smiling and thinking about it and how they got away with it. But in the interim, we're talking about millions of people's lives being affected by what took place after 9/11. George just talked about Iraq. And if we look at Iraq a little bit, and we see that even today, Iraq is still reeling in so many places as far as the type of stability or the lack thereof in certain regions. And we saw that with the situation that the United States brought about in Iraq, and then, of course, the Daesh terrorist group, that the whole country would have been lost to terrorists had it not been for the forces of the resistance. Let's talk about all of this and why Washington and its friends have not paid any price for what they've done.
Well, I think you're wrong. I think they they have paid a price. They've paid a price of credibility. You know, the United States in the 20th century was considered to be a relatively stable superpower, maybe a positive force in the world even, although, of course, there have been many wars. And I think what's happened is, as it may have got them some short-term military goals, the September 11th attacks. But the result has been a complete lack of trust in the United States around the world. Diplomatically, I mean, as we're seeing in Africa now, many countries are turning away from the European and US influence and starting to gain their independence from this whole kind of neocolonial empire. And so they have paid a price. I think that's pretty clear. No, maybe that they are in their own minds. They have convinced themselves that they've got away with it. But the rest of the world hasn't. And you're right about, you know, it's maybe it's not appropriate to be smiling about some of these ironies. But there is an absurdity to the fact that, you know, the war on terrorism. Well, how can you have a war on an abstract noun? And what we're now doing is in the West is proscribing very important and completely legitimate military groups as so-called terrorists. For example, the Wagner private military company has been proscribed as a terrorist group, and yet the XE Blackwater Eric Prince's private military company hasn't, because it's it's funded from the West. The same with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard troops. They have been proscribed as a terrorist outfit. And Hezbollah has as well. But these are all completely legitimate and associated with democratically elected governments. And the idea, it seems to me, is to just smear these various military opponents, political opponents as well, as terrorists. And I'm afraid that that doesn't wash in the international community. It might be okay for them to get away with a bit of propaganda for the stupid people who are watching TV domestically in the West. Yes, those people may be convinced, but the rest of the world, I'm afraid, is not, by this attempt to use this term and abuse this term terrorism. And I think the origin of this, if you look back, you'll see Benjamin Netanyahu in 1986 published a book. It was called Terrorism, How the West Can Win, which actually began this process of saying, well, if we create this kind of terrorist threat, a massive terrorist threat, much of which, of course, the West, through funding ISIS and various other groups, have created, that then we can use this in order to win geopolitical battles. Well, I think that that is coming to the end of the road now. And most political leaders, investors even, around the world, including many journalists outside the Western mass media, have understood this. And basically, the Americans are running out of road now. The West is running out of road with this whole strategy.
Hmm. Okay, interesting point. George, your take, because Tony talked about losing credibility. Do you think the loss of credibility it took place because of what happened on 9/11 and the questions behind it, or after 9/11 and the so-called war on terror, or is it because of the sanctions? Is it because of labeling so many groups or countries as terror? I mean, what is it? I mean, because we look at it all together, and yes, we definitely see the fall of the U.S. empire, of hegemony. Which one would you say, or would you say was a combination of things that have led to that lack of credibility now?
Well, I don't know that the United States has lost that much credibility overall, because the places that you listed, they never really thought highly of the United States. They never really trusted the United States even before the 9/11 attacks. I mean, they saw the war in Indochina, which was a very, very brutal war, in many ways far more brutal than what the United States did to Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, it really pummeled the Vietnamese. And so, you know, many people in the non-European world were obviously very distrustful of the United States. But at the same time, you have to look at it, well, the United States now has consolidated its alliances much more strongly than it ever had before. I mean, NATO, and that means the European Union and their various allies around the world, you know, the Japans, the South Koreas, the Australias, they are more embedded within the U.S. security framework than they have ever been. The United States blew up the Nord Stream gas pipeline, the pipeline that was supposed to provide natural gas to Germany. Germany, its closest ally in Europe, the great economic power of Europe, And what was the consequence? The Germans said nothing. They sat on their hands and accepted it. If you're in that position, then you don't even get complaints when you do something so
let me just jump in here, George. You made an interesting point.
Really paid a price.
Okay, you made an interesting point in dealing with Germany. So would you say then there it's a greater alliance, or is it because the U.S. is threatening them and occupying their countries to a degree that it's very difficult for them to do anything? I mean, your assessment of this, because that is important. Which is it?
Well, it's both. It's threatening, occupying, and that these countries have made themselves into dependencies of the United States. They are afraid of losing the essential, the blank check that the United States gave them, essentially that they could live off the largesse of the U.S. taxpayer, so they didn't have to spend any money on their own militaries. The Americans would do it for them. And what happens when you essentially live off somebody else's largesse? Well, you get hooked on it. Mm-hmm. And the Europeans are today much, much more intimidated by the United States. And, you know, they wouldn't dare to go against the will of the United States in the way that previous generations of European leaders attempted to do, whether it was Willy Brandt in the 1970s or De Gaulle in the 60s. No one, there's no one at all on the European scene who would dare to defy the United States.
Well, Tony, getting back to what you had said, that you feel that they have paid a price, when I expand on that, what I'm looking at, I mean, because we look at the millions of people who have been killed, and of course, no one really went to prison on that level, except for the whistleblowers who tried to expose these crimes of what the United States and its friends did in Afghanistan or Iraq. We have even Julian Assange right now in jail. So then what does it mean? You said their credibility has lessened, but overall, we have millions of people, again, dead and displaced and instability in their countries. But these so-called leaders, whether we're talking about a Bush or a Blair or those type, are still walking around free and also even getting rewards and talking about their great accomplishment to humanity. I mean, your take on this?
Well, look, it is a double-edged sword. I think George, to a certain extent, is right that, you know, they there's been a enormous a kind of sycophancy in the NATO countries, particularly in Europe and the UK, towards American policy. So, but there is a bit of kickback too. I mean, the obvious problem at the moment is Britain is now being told, well, we're going to have nuclear weapons based here in Britain. In fact, there's been some leaks through Congress saying American nuclear weapons are now going to return to East Anglia, into the eastern part of Britain, to the big US bases there. Drones coming back into or arriving for the first time actually in the UK too. So the Americans, we were always told in the 1980s that Britain was going to be America's unsinkable aircraft carrier, and that is quite clearly going to be a nuclear armed aircraft carrier in the future. So yes, George is right, but let's also look at the other side, which is, if you go back a few years to 2017, we had the attack, the false flag chemical weapons attack in Syria, and then an immediate push by the United States through NATO for some really serious military action in Syria to get NATO troops out there. Actually, the British pushed back against that. The British Parliament had no stomach for it. The British Army didn't have a stomach for it. So I think there is a certain sycophancy. So we will take American orders so long as it doesn't actually mean that we personally, as individual nations, are engaged in, it's literally a proxy war for the United States in Europe, although of course that may come. But there is political pushback against it, and I think to a certain extent the US believes its own propaganda that the Europeans are its little puppets, you know, its little puppies that will do it exactly as they're told. I don't think they are when it comes down to it.
Okay, well, George, let's look at the world 2023 compared to 2001. Is the world safer today than it was then? Is there less terrorism today than it was then?
No, I don't think it is safer. And I think that we have to look at it from, you know, to get outside of these U.S.-created categories. The global war on terror was never any kind of a war on terror. Whom did the United States target? Well, all of the states, the secular states, that hated terrorism, that had no time for terrorists, that they actually waged wars against the terrorists. So who are we talking about? Well, we're talking obviously about Saddam Hussein. We're talking about Bashar al-Assad in Syria. We're talking about Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. We're, of course, talking about Iran. Well, what do these states have in common? Iran, obviously, is not a secular state. Well, they hated al-Qaeda. They hated ISIS. They hated the jihadists. So it's very strange that the United States says, well, we're waging this war, global war on terror, when the only power that's actually enabling terrorists, that's providing aid of military and financial to terrorists, is the United States. Because we know that the United States began funding and arming ISIS in Syria. I mean, okay. This is, you know, and moved those weapons from Libya to Syria in order to topple Bashar al-Assad. So, yeah, terrorism has increased through no small measure due to the United States.
Okay. And on that note, unfortunately, we're out of time, but I just have to comment, George, you talked about terrorism and the U.S. supporting it. And, of course, being that I'm sitting in Tehran, it makes me think of General Soleimani, of course, who was the ultimate fighter against terrorism, who was also killed by the United States. I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. George Zemmerle, Senior Research Fellow, Global Policy Institute, London Metropolitan University, out of Budapest. And Tony Goslin, historian, investigative journalist, out of Bristol. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Hope to see you right here next time. Goodbye.